This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manassero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manassero, and this is a show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes or Apple Podcast, type in Old Dog, spelled D-A-W-G, find our podcast and subscribe. Well, we've got a great show for you today. We're going into an area that is really key, and I think very key for today's economy especially, because as we may have to tighten up our belts and adjust to, you know, changes that have happened in the economy recently, we also have to look at our expenses. We have to look at ways to be able to reduce expenses, of course, to boost cash flow. This gentleman that we have with us today knows a lot about that. His name is Kevin Gardner. After nearly 20 years with Comcast, including time as the Midwest Division Vice President of Sales and Marketing, and as an area vice president, Kevin left the large cable operator side of the business to oversee sales, marketing, and customer care at James Cable during a time James was trying to liquidate their properties. James, being a much smaller MSO, and that stands for multiple system operator, with systems throughout the southern and western United States, gave Kevin additional operational experience within the cable industry. Throughout his career, Kevin was responsible for managing the team that negotiated telecommunications access agreements for those MSOs. For multifamily property operators, Kevin's experience has resulted in favorable contract terms related to their telecommunications agreements. Additionally, TMS clients have realized significant savings from TMS's department that specializes in negotiating energy and waste agreements on their behalf. Well, Kevin, welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network.
Bill, thank you so much. And first off, thank you for pointing out that my bio is way too long and could probably use a little bit of editing.
Well, you know,
I was bored with it.
I get the same issue. Sometimes it's like, Bill, do you really need to include the story about when you used to ride your bike to school, you know, with a banana bicycle seat? And no. Okay. Anyway,
uphill both ways and everything. So, yeah. So I just wrote down update bio on my things to do list. So I appreciate that.
No. Well, it's great having you on, Kevin. This is a great area because, you know, there's cutting expenses, like I mentioned before I introduced you, and then there's also creating new revenue, and both of which you have experience in here, especially for the multifamily operator. I thought maybe before we kind of jump into the topic, maybe you just give us a little bit more about your background. Granted, I kind of read quite a bit there about your background, but just how did you kind of move into the multifamily space? You were look like you're pretty heavily into the cable operations side. Really be interested in kind of hearing, you know, how you interacted with apartment owners and so forth.
Yeah, so when I was with Comcast, what they called commercial development piece of the business department reported in through sales and marketing. And when I reached a certain level in the organization, that department then reported into me. And so we oversaw that department where Comcast, at least in the regions that I was responsible for, was negotiating with property owners. Right. So I got a lot of exposure to that. I signed a lot of contracts, reviewed a lot of contracts, and managed a lot of the people that were negotiating the contracts. So we got a really good understanding of the process. As Comcast grew and got bigger, I decided that, I really enjoyed the small entrepreneurial, business environment. And so actually started my own company. Still involved in cable, doing some consulting, and two of our first clients were Comcast and Charter Spectrum, and they retained us as a third party to negotiate with owners on their behalf to do some of these agreements. And then over time, what happened was they took that work in-house, and so we said, well, we know this area so well, why not go to the other side of the table and help owners take advantage of this? Because what we were really finding out was there were a lot of owners that didn't even realize that there was revenue opportunities available to them until we approached them. So that was kind of the evolution of how we got to be Multifamily Utility Solutions.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I think it's one of those areas too, that a lot of owners look at, just kind of skeptically, to be, a little bit honest there, is that it's, kind of looking at, we're in a competitive market, for example, and we're looking at ways to be able to position our apartment building, which is exactly like the one across the street, and try to draw, more of the good tenant base in there to get some good tenants. So you're always looking for things to make available for them. And, and the luxury apartments, it's a whole different ballpark, really, because they've got things like concierge and pick up your dirty laundry and all kinds of stuff,
right?
But for the like B, C and B operators, it's usually pretty tight, so it's hard to be able to increase your expenses to try and generate additional income, and what's the offset going to be? Because that's really the sort of the big question. If I have to, wire my whole building for cable, I don't have people that want to go for that. Am I going to be stuck with that monthly expense? And so there's a lot of questions, and so maybe you can kind of clarify that as you, talk to people. Does it make sense for smaller apartment owners, people that maybe only have, 5, 10, 15 units, or is it really sort of a threshold, maybe 50 plus apartments that make sense, or who really signs up for that kind of service, and what is that service comprised of?
Yeah, well, there was a lot of questions in there, so let me kind of sort through several of them. So first of all, this can be right for anybody, usually with 50 units or more. The real sweet spot is at 100. Is what we found. Now, when I say those numbers, and again, it's all about leverage, right? The more units, the better your negotiating stance and your ability to get a better deal. You referenced providing service as an amenity. That is one option, but there's also a way for you to generate revenue through a different option. So there's really two types of contracts that the property owner can enter into with the cable company. The first of which is what you referenced, which is called bulk build service. And that is where, let's say I have 100 units. I go to Spectrum and say, I want to provide this service. I want to provide cable TV and internet as an amenity. Spectrum will then negotiate with me a preferred price because I'm buying in bulk. I'm buying for all 100 units, and I will always get a better than rate card price for doing that. In exchange for that, though, I'm committing to them for a certain period of time, usually 5 years, that I will pay for every unit regardless of whether or not the unit is occupied, regardless of whether or not the tenant or a resident wants the service or uses the service. So in exchange for me getting a preferred price, I am guaranteeing them certain things. Now, they like it for obvious reasons. They aren't necessarily sending trucks every time somebody moves in and out. They're sending one bill instead of 100 bills. You're probably less likely to be a non-pay or go into collections than some of your residents and things like that. So for them, that's their preferred option. They would love everybody in multifamily to be bulk billed. It would be an ideal situation for them. What they will then tell you, which is true, is that you can then either raise your rent by more than you're paying. So let's say you get the service for $50, but the retail rate is $100. You could raise your rent by, say, $80 and promote the fact that you now include internet and cable, and you would maybe be more attractive if you're fighting for occupancy for somebody who values those services than somebody next door who doesn't include those. Or the resident may be like, well, I was going to pay $100 anyhow, so it's really cheaper for me to get it through you. So it just really depends on the property, on the market, on what rent is, on whether or not you're in a fight for occupancy and tenants or not. And, you know, people love simple answers like, well, what can I do? And the problem is that just like buying in a property, the right contract is different for every property. I mean, there's some similarities, but the first step we do is we find out as much as we can about the property, the market, and things like that to see what might make sense before we make any recommendations to the owner whatsoever. So that's what's called bulk billing. A way to create an amenity, buy at a discount, mark it up, and then generate additional revenues. The other option is what's called right of entry. And in that case, all you're doing is you're signing an agreement with the cable company, and you are giving them the right to be on your property. Now, in most cases, they're already on your property, right? So, and this is where we see a lot of owners, especially new owners, aren't even aware of the fact that they have to have your permission to be on your property. So let's say, you know, I live near Cleveland, Ohio. And Spectrum is the provider here. So let's say that Spectrum gets a franchise to operate in the city of Cleveland. All that does is it gives them the right to be on the public easements. It doesn't give them the right to be on anybody's personal property. If I'm a homeowner, I then give them the right to be on my personal property when I sign up for their service. But in the situation of an apartment complex, the resident who's paying the bill and wants the service can't necessarily give Spectrum the right to be on the owner's property. The owner has to do it. So there's like an extra step in there. So the owner in that world is kind of like a gatekeeper to the residents. And that's why it's called a right of entry. I'm not going to buy in bulk from you, but I'm going to give you the right to enter my property beyond my property so that you can then access potential customers who are my residents. And, you know, one of the things is, well, they're already on my property. And that's true. And they didn't just come on there without permission. But some properties are 20, 30, 40 years old, right? And where is that piece of paper? They didn't used to record these documents. They didn't, you know, it could be nothing more than a grant of easement. It could be a contract that was at one time in place, but between ownership changes of the cable companies, ownership changes of the property, who knows where it is? Or it could be expired. or in an auto-renew term. So those are all different things that we've seen over the years. So the first thing we need to identify is, you know, what is there an agreement in place? If not, what type of agreement makes the most sense for the owner? Is it bulk or is it right of entry? And then we can go further down the path of both of those, depending on what makes the most sense for them.
Now, does right of entry have opportunities for additional income?
Yes.
What does that normally look like?
So depending on the cable company that we're dealing with and how competitive the market is and things like that, we can get several things. One is what's called a door fee or a signing bonus. And that is basically saying, look, in exchange for you signing this agreement with certain rights that you're giving us, the right to be on your property, the right that you're going to exclusively market us, you know, things like that, we will give you a lump sum fee for signing the agreement. So that's one time lump sum fee, comes in usually 90 days within the contract being signed. The other option is ongoing compensation, which is typically paid out quarterly, and it's called revenue share. And it's just what it sounds like. They're going to share their revenue that they generate from your property with you. They're going to give you a percentage because they want you to help them grow their business. So when somebody new moves in there, they're going to want you, your leasing agent, to say, hey, we strongly recommend Spectrum. They're the best provider in here. Here's their flyer. You know, call them. Most people here have them, you know, get their service. The other thing you can do is some owners still allow dishes and things like that. You can set a policy with all new leases that, you know, I don't want dishes. They look terrible. I don't want them on my property. I don't like the aesthetics of them. I don't like the potential damage. So we're not going to do that. In that case, obviously, that would help Spectrum, because you're saying to anybody that might have a DirecTV or Dish network, you can't have that on our property. And you as the property owner have the right to do that.
Is that a case in all municipalities? I mean, I'd heard in the past that you couldn't restrict people with Dish networks. Is that something that you'd say it's across the board? As an owner, you have the right to do that if you have an existing arrangement with a cable network?
Yeah, my understanding, and I've never heard otherwise, is that you as the owner of the property can restrict that. Now, the city can't prevent dishes from property owners, but you as the property owner certainly have the right to put that in your lease, as we do not allow dishes on our property. You have, you know, my understanding is you have the right to do that because it's your property, it's your dwelling, you don't want them. You know, what are they going to do? Mount it on your, you know, you don't want that. It creates, you know, other issues. And I know of many, many owners that have that restriction in their leases.
Yeah, there was one property that I was looking at to purchase. And as we're doing the inspection, I was noticing just a overwhelming number of these dishes that are just really, really an eyesore. And they're all over the place. Some are, yep, you know, in the middle of, you know, flower beds. Some are stuck, you know, out on walls, right, windows. I mean, everywhere, you know. And I was saying, well, what are my rights, you know, to ask people to remove those? And I was told that we couldn't ask them. And that was the property manager on site at the time. So I don't know if that really is the case if you come into a sort of a pre-existing kind of situation.
Right. In a case like that, you have to be careful. You for new leases, you certainly can. But for existing leases, you can't necessarily change that lease without, you know, the owner's consent. I'm not an attorney, don't want to be an attorney. You know, certainly, you know, if there's an existing, you know, agreement in place, you can't, you know, impact that without notice and things like that. So, but on a go forward basis, we've seen it where owners have a similar situation, bought a property, and then it's just like, okay, I can't do anything about the existing dishes, but I can certainly on new people, I can, you know, and therefore, if I'm turning over leases every year, within a year, I'm going to be without, you know, no dishes.
Have you ever heard situations where maybe a new owner makes a deal with them and says, look, I'll give you 1 year of free cable service if you, you know, take this down, and then you know, at that point you can renew after that year, or some sort of an arrangement like that?
You know, I haven't, Bill. I haven't heard of that, but certainly I would expect that there are cases where that probably has occurred. You know, that there's some like, look, in exchange for this, I'm going to give you this. And that's what we're talking about in the contracts here, right? You want something I've got some, you know, how do we work this out? So you give me door fee and or revenue share, I'm going to sign your agreement and exclusively market you to my residents. Right. So, you know, similar type situation.
Now, is it always an exclusive sort of arrangement when you do, let's say, decide to go with Spectrum or whoever it may be? They want exclusivity. And what do you do to existing people that may have AT&T or somebody else that provides, you know, the service they want?
Yeah, there is typically some form of exclusivity. We've done contracts without any exclusivity, but you know, the compensation, right? It's all a negotiation. Okay, we want exclusivity. We don't want to give you exclusivity. Well, we're not going to give you as much for non-exclusive contract as we would give you for an exclusive contract. And keep in mind here, all we're saying is that there's the exclusive marketing rights, but not necessarily the exclusive right to provide service.
Gotcha.
Right? So you can still have other providers in there. You're just kind of promoting one over another. An exclusive right to market simply means that of all the things that you can control, you promote only them. So if you've got Spectrum and AT&T and you've got an exclusive marketing agreement with Spectrum, if you're going to have a pool party, for example, or if you're going to have point of purchase materials in your office, or if you're going to put somebody on your website, those are all things you can control. That's Spectrum only. You can't control whether or not AT&T sends direct mail to your residents. You can't control that. So that's out of your area. That doesn't fall into the exclusive marketing rights.
You mentioned the bulk and sort of the ongoing types of arrangements. I know it's difficult because prices are going to vary from market to market, but give me a rough idea, you know, like what a bulk contract would yield dollar wise as opposed to revenue share?
Boy, you know, I really hate to be put on the spot because every deal is different for so many reasons. The more units you have, the better you can negotiate, right? If you're negotiating for a 400 unit property versus a 50 unit property, the numbers look a lot different. And if you're negotiating in, you know, an area right outside of Cleveland where there's two providers that you can choose from, versus an area like where I live, where it's a smaller community that only has one provider and it's a smaller company, the numbers are just going to vary so greatly that it's very difficult. And that's why the first thing we do when we work with a new client is tell me about your property. Let me know what you've got there. What are you working with? What's the market? And we do homework before we ever do that. So, you know, there's some of the smaller cable operators, like Armstrong and Atlantic Broadband and some of these other guys, Mediacom, where they're the only provider and they're out in a more rural area where they're not willing to give you much of anything because you don't really have as many options.
Right. And that makes sense, of course.
Yeah. So I've done that before and people call up, hey, I want my $100 a door and my, you know, and I'm like, well, guess what? You've got 12 units and it's in, you know, Medina, Ohio, where there's only Armstrong and you're not going to get that. I'm sorry. I hate to tell you that, but you're not going to get that.
Right. Well, you know, what's really interesting about your company, too, is you don't just do the cable aspect. You started moving into other utilities. And could you, you know, go ahead and tell us about that and what utilities, and is there really room for negotiating on those types of things?
Yeah, I'll tell you, Bill, that 95% of what we do is cable and internet because that's available throughout the country. We can do that anywhere. Electric and gas, we've got a broker that we partner with that does electric and gas. The challenge there is it's limited. It is only available in certain markets, right? So certain states have deregulated their electric or gas and or gas. Other states have not. For example, I do a lot of business in Tennessee. Tennessee Valley Authority, regulated rates. There is no other option besides them to provide service. Whereas in my backyard, Northeast Ohio, Ohio's deregulated. There are other providers of electric and gas, and we can go and compete and ask for other rates. So I would say that, I don't know what the exact number is, but I would say, it's probably only 20% maybe of the country, 20 to 25%, where that's even a possibility. The other thing is, we all know the importance of leverage. And if you are in a situation where you are paying the electric for your residence and you've got a significant electric bill and you've got laundry rooms and you've got common areas and you've got workout rooms and pools and things like that where you're driving your usage up and you are in a deregulated market, then there's a much greater opportunity to, save for savings there. But if you are a smaller property and you it's individually billed, each resident is taking care of their own electric, and you don't have a workout facility and common areas, but outside entrances instead, and the laundries maybe not in laundry rooms where you're paying for it, but in the actual units, your usage is going to be small. So the opportunity is going to be fairly limited. So again, I feel like I'm not answering your questions, but it really is kind of a case by case situation. And I know this is, primarily for education, but what we do when we take on a new client is we do all that research and all that kind of stuff up front to let the customer know, the client know, what the opportunity is before we even enter into any type of agreement with them that outlines any compensation. So we do all that up front at no charge to determine, is there an opportunity that we should explore here or not? And we have to do that because everyone is different.
Great. Well, that's good information. What would you say are some of the sort of common mistakes that people do? Maybe they're trying to do this themselves and or maybe they're totally missing opportunity. What would you say is sort of one of the common things that you see as you deal with operators that are, again, trying to either generate income or reduce expenses here?
Yeah, a couple of things. First of all, is just the lack of awareness that this is available to them, right? So a lot of people, especially if they're not paying the cable bill for all the residents, a lot of them are not even aware that this is an opportunity for them to increase their revenues. Let's face it. I work with a lot of some of these educational companies that come on into our seminar and learn how to do real estate. And one in particular that has this three-pronged approach. It's buy right, manage right, and then finance right. And, we're part of the manage right. So we help, you got to make sure you get a good deal. But then you next thing is, once you get that good deal, you got to be able to increase the net operating income so you can refinance, take those proceeds, and then invest in your next property. And so what we, one of the things that we see is that people aren't aware of this as being an opportunity. And so we do a lot of just simply education. We educate people that this is an opportunity. This is a way for you to increase your NOI. And let's say you only increase your NOI by, if it's revenue share, maybe it's only like $3 a month per unit or something like that. But that's $36 a unit per year. And take that times multiples when you go to refinance, it starts becoming pretty significant. So that's one of the biggest things. It's just the lack of understanding that this is available to them. And then the fact that, they think that, if I don't pay for the cable, I don't need a cable contract. And you really do, you have that right to say who's on your property.
Got it. And what would you say in terms of successes? What, maybe there's something that stands out for you or it just all worked out really well for an operator.
We've had numerous successes. I guess we wouldn't still be here if we didn't, but I had an owner who had 74 units in Dallas, Texas, and we went and we asked for a proposal And the proposal, quite frankly, was not really all that significant. It was okay. I mean, you know, it was okay, but he's like, he's kind of hoping for more. I'm like, well, let me do this. Let me go talk to other owners in the marketplace and let me see if I can increase our leverage. And that's exactly what we did, is we pulled other owners in. And then he's like, hey, you know, I know a guy over here who owns a 200 unit property. Let me have him call you. And so we created this leverage. So it was almost like a group of people came together, owners, and we represented, instead of 74, we made that 74 part of a portfolio of properties that was 1,600, right? That's awesome. So the deal for 1,600 looks a little different than a deal for 74 only. So that was a great success story. And we did something similar with an owner in Louisville. You know, they had 94 units, and we didn't, you know, just under that 100 threshold. And, you know, so it's kind of like, I'm going to be buying some other properties in that market. Why don't we wait? And that's exactly what we did. We waited until they closed on two more properties. We got the total count up to about 200 across three properties. And, you know, we got a much better deal. So, you know, those are a couple of success stories that we've had recently.
That's great. Your business sounds like it's really, you know, doing some great stuff. What do you see ahead for your business? What's exciting for you in terms of where your business is going?
Well, I think it's growing. People are becoming more aware of this. We're getting newer buyers into, you know, into the world of multifamily investing. So they're doing more homework. They're more online savvy, I think, and things like that, where, you know, they're doing more research. But, you know, like anything, you know, the pendulum swings back and forth. I'm seeing that the minimum number of units required is going up. So for some property owners, that's not a good thing, right? Because if I've got 50 units, and now the it's going back up to, you know, we're only going to deal with 100 units and above, you know, we're seeing things like that. And some of the deals are not as lucrative as they were. But, you know, as things get more competitive, it could swing back the other way. But, you know, that those are some of the things that are going on in the business right now. And, you know, I think you mentioned earlier, why can't people do this themselves? They can, you know, just like I can, you know, use YouTube and try and figure out how to change my oil or build my own website or, God forbid, you know, these days, maybe cut my own hair or something like that, right? I could do all those things, but I'm not a professional. I don't know what the outcome's going to be. I don't know how to do it. It's going to take me a lot of time to figure out how to do it. And, you know, why not turn it over to the professionals that, you know, like me, am I better off taking my car in and letting somebody else change my oil and taking an hour that way? Or am I better off trying to take probably what would take me 2 or 3 hours to try and do it myself, when I can take those other hour and two hours and devote it to something where I'm the subject matter expert, which is cable and internet contracts? So I don't know, but that's just the way I look at it. You know, when I'm making decisions in my life, you know, do I want to do it or do I want to have somebody who really knows what they're doing do it?
Sure. Now, you mentioned, you know, cable and internet contracts. They are very different. It's interesting that some people just exclusively go with the internet and they'll just do live streaming or other things to get similar services, cable. Do you see, you know, more people moving in that direction? Like, you know, I mean, AT&T, I guess, offers both, but I know, you know, there's a fair amount of people out there, you know, other operators I know that that just do the, you know, hey, we offer, you know, everything on Roku and you know, that's it. And then they only have that Wi-Fi operation that they have to pay for each month.
Right. And yeah, you're right. So like Comcast, Cox Communications, Spectrum, they all do cable TV and internet. And, you know, that's the same contract and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, they've been doing cable. See, cable, you know, I'm old enough to remember when there was cable and there wasn't high speed data service. And, you know, cable used to be a very, very lucrative, high margin product. And then things changed. people started adding, you know, hundreds of channels, and those hundreds of channels cost more money, and you couldn't push up the price enough to continue to have the margin you once had. So that margin has gotten squeezed, and that's why people are now focused on, I've got this wire in the house, I just want the internet. The internet is where the profit is. I got to have that pipeline. And honestly, there's certain cable companies out there that they could care less whether or not you take their video service, because it's almost gotten to a break even for them. Now they want the internet service because that's where the business is going, and you know, things like that. So, but yeah, it's it is definitely the cord cutting is you know, the term for getting rid of cable and taking like a Hulu or a Sling or Netflix or Roku or whatever the case may be. You know, that's growing, and that, you know, that's one of the reasons that the larger cable companies that still do bulk video service really value that service and want you to have that, because that's one of the numbers they report to Wall Street is, you know, number of lines active and number of customers and things like that. And so that's one of the other incentives that they want to be aggressive with their pricing, so that you go ahead and get the, you know, video service from them at a discounted bulk rate, as opposed to, you know, internet only and then Hulu, for example, or something like that.
Right. And then they'll move into sort of the bandwidth game, you know, and just, you know, they just give you the basic, you know, internet service, and it doesn't, you know, it's just not enough for a typical household. So, you know, well, you got to increase your bandwidth. And, you know, before you know it, they're getting cable prices for the same thing. So I get it, how they could see that as a real viable income source.
Correct.
Time's kind of zipping by here. And I'm just kind of, wow, I'm going, this is going quick here. But I thought if there might be anything else that you know, feel you should touch on that might be of, you know, our listeners are folks that are 50 years of age and older. They're looking at their retirement, either it's approaching or they're already in their retirement, and they're looking at ways that they might be able to, you know, generate income. And of course, they're looking at real estate investing as a viable means for that. But is there anything that you might want to say to that audience that might be relevant? You know, some of them are going to buy single family homes. Some are going to look for apartments. Some are going to look at syndications and other things. But you might offer them in terms of value that they, you know, they just kind of take with them in their education of real estate investing.
You know, I saw a podcast from somebody who does a show, obviously probably not as good as yours, Bill, but does another show. And they were talking about the fact that they didn't start investing until they were over 50. And I think he's like pushing 70 now, but he's like incredibly wealthy because it was never too late to start.
Yeah. And that's the truth.
You know, even if you're 50 to 55, it's not too late to start. You still, you know, 15 years from now, you could have this huge portfolio and create amass an incredible amount of wealth. And this guy is one that of the, you know, numerous people that have done it. And I just took that away from, you know, from his message as well.
Well, yeah, even look at your own, you know, 20 years in the cable industry. I mean, I don't know how old you are, but, you know, you might be approaching the big 50.
I qualify for your show.
All right. Yeah. And so you started your own business. So, I mean, that's pretty bold. You know, that's something I think a lot of folks are looking at. There's a lot of folks that listen to our show that really don't even see retirement or understand retirement. They want to just keep going and keep doing things, you know, whether it's a work or whether it's a, you know, hobby or whether it's just full-time investing. You know, I think a lot of folks just see, you know, their lives kind of just beginning, you know, at 60 or whatever. So, you know, I think that's a good, definitely a good point you're bringing up.
I never intend to retire. I don't ever want to retire. I really don't. I really don't. I enjoy my work. Not 100% of the time everything's smooth and like, wow, there's nothing better I could be doing in my life or anything like that. But for the most part, absolutely. I enjoy it and have no desire to retire.
That's people always ask me too, because they know that the show I do, it's called The Old Dogs REI Network, and they go, "Oh, so you're retired?" And not really. I don't see this as retirement. I'm working, you know, as busy as I've ever been, you know. But I love it. I love what I do. So it makes it a little bit different. But that's a good, really good point.
Yeah.
Well, we come up to the session here. We call it our wrap it up session, where I ask you a series of quick questions and you kind of share resources that are of value to you. If you are ready, we can go ahead and wrap it up.
All right, let's go.
All right, first question. Favorite real estate book? Now, again, I know you're not necessarily an investor here, but has there been a real estate book that has maybe had an impact on you?
You know, I really like Jake and Gino.
Me too. We've had them on the show. They're great.
Yeah,
that's great.
They're clients of mine. I participate in their conferences, and I just think they just kind of like make it straightforward. It's just common sense. It's just easy to follow, and maybe that's what makes it appealing to me. But the honeybee book that they just wrote, and then
The new one,
Wheelbarrow Profits. I enjoy both of them. Easy reads and very educational. So I definitely recommend their stuff.
Oh, that's great. That's great. That's the first time that one's been recommended, but I've heard great stuff about it. So
yeah, it's excellent. Great. Yep.
How about just general business book?
You know, I've got two of them that I've really enjoyed, and you know, I know a lot of people kind of go to the same go-tos, but there's two that have really stood out for me that are, I think, a little bit off the beaten track. One is called "If It Ain't Broke, Break It."
I like that. I haven't heard that one before. Yeah.
And the whole message there is, if you aren't looking at your business on what's wrong and if you don't think it's broken, your competitors are finding out why it is broken, and they're going to break it before you, you know. So that's another one. Robert Kriegel, I think is how you pronounce it. And the other one is "Make Elephants Fly" by Stephen Hoffman. And it talks about make elephants fly. You can't do that. Well, he walks through and talks about anything is doable if you approach it the right way. So those are two of my favorite business books.
Excellent, excellent. How about most valuable website for success, of course, other than your own?
Man, I'll tell you what, I'm addicted to LinkedIn. I don't know why. I mean, I just make so many contacts and connections through LinkedIn.
That's great. Yeah, that's one of those, you know, I'm on it and I have like a lot of contacts, but I don't know how to work it. And I know people that do, and they're just like, they're going gangbusters on it in terms of business. So I know it can be great. I may have to pick your brain later on about that. But
I probably spend 30 to 60 minutes a day on it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
How about a favorite app? Anything on your phone that you use on a regular basis?
You know, I default to Facebook. I'm not going to lie. I still follow things there. Not only business on the business side, but I just really enjoy seeing what my friends and family members are doing. I don't do any of the political discussions on there. And if anybody starts getting too political, I'll not follow. I go there for, you know, I love to see success stories and friends that are experiencing great things.
Yeah, I love that too. I mean, it really actually has helped, I think, a lot of people in terms of being more in contact with family and friends. It's great. It's great from that standpoint, definitely. How about a favorite quote?
You know, just like on the book thing, I mentioned two. I've got two quotes, and I can't discern one over the other. The one quote that I absolutely love and aspire to is by T.S. Eliot. "It's only those who will risk going too far can possibly find out how far one can go."
It's great.
Love that quote. And yeah. "Back to the World of Sports," a John Wooden quote, really, really means a lot to me. And it is "Things turn out best for the people who make the best of the way things turn out."
I love it. I love it. He's got some great quotes.
He does. I've read his book too, and it's just like all his quotes and everything like that. But that one just stood out to me. So those are Those are my two favorites.
Very cool. Well, this one we ask generally our real estate investors, so you can buy out of this one if you want to, but I'll ask you anyway. So if you lost everything, your business, boom, you're just like all your assets are gone. All you have is $1,000 in cash in your hand. What would you do with that $1,000 to restart your business? Now, again, this is knowing what you know today. Okay, so you've been doing it for a while. You have some experience. What could you do with that $1,000 to sort of jumpstart that and get it going again?
Oh man, Bill, I'm going to have to plead ignorance, because most of the things that we do to generate more business are work on LinkedIn and network and things like that. A lot of things that don't cost money.
Well, maybe that's it. Then that could be it. You might not even need the $1,000. I mean, maybe if you had to buy a computer or something, something like that.
If I didn't have a computer, I would get a computer and get online, because more than anything, I'm networking all the time using LinkedIn and Facebook and email and great podcasts like yours. That's what it's about more than anything. For me.
Awesome. Well, I am sure that there's a lot of people listening here that are intrigued by what you do and the service that you provide. What's the sort of the best way for folks to get a hold of you to find out more about what you do and maybe ask questions? What do they do?
Yeah. So our company is Multifamily Utility Solutions, and our website is simply multifamilyutilitysolutions.com. My email is kevin@multifamilyutilitysolutions.com. So my phone number's on there. We answer questions. I talk to people that I never end up doing business, that are educational. I talked to a guy 3 years ago who had a fourplex. I saw him the next year at Jake and Gino's conference, and he was up to 24 units at that point. And in the last year, we've done, he's up to about 300 or 400 units, and we've done work for him now. But, we talk to people because we're in this for the long term. We're in this for long term, relationships. So I don't mind talking to anybody for 15, 20 minutes and just educating them on what we do and things they should be looking for.
I'm sure you'll get some takers here.
Sounds good.
Wow. Well, man, time is just like zipped by. Man, my apologies there.
No, no worries. I didn't even realize what time it was, man. It's just fun. It's just fun talking. It was, very enjoyable.
We have a tradition here at the Old Dogs Network, and I don't know if you read all the way down on your notes that I sent to you, but all of our guests get to close us out with their, we're called the Old Dogs REI Network, right? So you get to give us your best old hound dog howl to close out the show today.
I will admit I did not scroll all the way down to see that, but
the fine print.
Yeah. That is down there. I had to increase the, we'll do our best. That's all we can do, right? All you can do is all you can do. That's another good quote for you.
I love it.
Is there a cue? Is there a countdown? Or are we doing this together?
You just do it.
All right.
It's all yours.
All right.
Oh, that's pretty good for a guy who didn't get to practice, man. That's a.
I don't even know if that's a hound dog or a coyote or a wolf or what.
It definitely works.
That's what you get from this old hound dog.
Well, thank you so much, Kevin. It's been great having you on.
Yeah, likewise, Bill. Enjoyed it very much. Thanks so much.
You bet. And I also want to thank all our old dog listeners out there, too, for joining us. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we greatly appreciate it. And please note, everything Kevin talked about today will be outlined in detail in our show notes at the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And you're going to look for the episode with Kevin Gardner. Well, that's the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast Give us a 5-star rating and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.